This is the Planetary Potential Podcast. For those who are eager to explore entrepreneurship, innovation, and cross-cultural communication in exciting and interesting places around the world. And now, here's your host, Andrew P. Rowan.
Welcome to episode 19 of season 1. How do you go from 10 operations per day to 500 operations per day without increasing headcount? This week, we're joined by Claudia Quintanilla, co-founder and chief operating officer of Rexty, a Lima-based fintech startup founded in 2017. During our conversation, we cover what it's like working with a lean, multicultural team, if crypto is in the cards for Rexty, and the double-edged sword that is word of mouth. An important reminder that opinions shared on this episode are those of individual guests. For more information, please visit www.andrewpiroan.com/disclosures. Claudia and I also cover data-driven decisions, balancing security with convenience in her industry, and the two opposing ways of looking at automation in a company. Let's dive into it.
With me is Claudia Quintanilla. She is co-founder and COO of Rexty. Rexty is a 100% digital currency exchange here in Lima, Peru. We are at their offices. So welcome, Claudia.
Hi, Andrew. Thank you very much.
So tell me a bit about Rexty, because when I came here, of course, I needed to exchange currency. I came here with US dollars and I needed soles, which is the local currency. So was that also the inception of how you started Rexty? You needed to travel somehow or exchange currency and then realized, this process could be improved.
Yes, that's right. You are very close. We are three co-founders, and one of us exchanged every month his salary because he earned his money in dollars. Uh-huh. So that's why we start thinking about this is very complex, because you put yourself in risk, because security in Peru is a critical thing.
Yeah.
Perhaps 30% of the population have been victim of crime, so it's a serious problem here. The other point is high cost of financial services, like 3% of the is the commission for an exchange currency, and you also have the waste of time, because you have to move, and you can spend like 1 hour and a half doing that thing. So Peru is a dual currency country. Mm-hmm. In practice. It's very easy for you to have to manage dollars and soles. So that's why we start looking for a solution, a digital solution. Mm-hmm. We say, hey, we have to do this. We have to make a currency exchange platform that is 100% digital.
I see. And so this was one of your co-founders. But before you were co-founders, what was your relationship to your co-founders?
One of them, we are three. One of them is my husband. Mm-hmm. So we start two of us. And then while we were doing the company, we met Matias. So we are Mateo from Spain, Matias from Argentina, and me from Peru. But we have different roles. Mateo is more have an IT background. Mm-hmm. As me, and Matias is more like financial. We meet each other like friends.
Yeah.
Interested on currency exchange.
Interesting. So before you were co-founder and COO of Rexty, you were working as a computer and systems engineer elsewhere, correct?
Yes, that's right.
Can you talk a bit about how you entered that career? Is it something that you knew initially from perhaps high school that you wanted to enter into that field?
Perhaps it's not something that I have always on my mind. Mm-hmm. But when I was younger, I loved math.
Okay.
So must be something, when I choose my career, I want something that includes a lot of math, because I like it. I entertain myself with that. That's why I select something about engineer. Mm. like computers were just initiating there. That's why I chose something really new for me, and I started liking it very much.
So you had that foundational interest in math, and that's what led you to engineering, and then from there you're like, okay, like computers are clearly going to make an impact.
Yes.
And so I should probably build up some domain expertise in this area.
Yes, that's right. That's
okay,
right.
Okay, interesting. And so then as your role as COO today, how much do you get to enjoy math?
Okay, I think it's something like logical. I mean, math gives you some abilities to make you logical or have some process or have how to solve problems. Mm-hmm. So as working in shares of operations with a background in technology made me look all the operational tasks like not to be something that you have to repeat. It's something that you have to use yourself just to solve deceptions. But all the other things you have to robotization. You have to robotize them with help of engineers. So I try to look that the people that work with me,
yes,
in operations don't do these tasks continually.
Okay, so in other words, you're always trying to find processes to automate.
Yes.
Okay. And in that sense, once you automate processes that people are working on, then they can move to higher value processes, correct?
Of course. They can do another thing.
Do your teammates understand that that is one of your underlying goals, to try and automate as many processes as possible?
Yes, because they live like this. They live with change, and sometimes you just wake up and say to them, well, we are not going to do this anymore. We're already automated, and you have to do another thing. And they have to change very, very faster.
I see. So even though they're at the front lines, they are not the ones who are helping to automate the process.
Yes, no. Okay. We work very close with IT department,
uh-huh,
and they understand how the operations are,
yeah,
or we detect some problems or something that we can automate, and told them how we do the process,
mm-hmm,
and then they automate and give us the automated task.
Okay, so you give them the specifications or requirements,
yes,
and then from that they're then able to automate the process.
Yes, that's right.
Now, from the worker perspective, you said before they'll have to transition quite quickly, right, to another role.
Yes.
How much time do they have in between when they're aware that their processes that they work with on a daily basis are going to be automated to when you finally say, okay, look, you know, we've given you X amount of time to transition to another role, but it doesn't seem like it's a good
fit? Must be very, very fast. Very fast.
So how much time?
One day.
One day?
Yes.
Okay, so can you give an example of what kind of transition that looks like from the worker perspective?
For example, when we used to validate users,
uh-huh,
we used to see different external platforms to validate that you are you. So we make it like manual and do a check in our internal system is right.
Uh-huh.
When that process is automated and a bot made that function, you don't have to do it anymore.
Right.
So you must look the exceptions, just that. And when the bot can solve it, you must look that exception. What's the error?
Yeah.
And yes, must be focused on that.
But you don't need the same amount of people. You can do it with fewer people, right?
Look that. In 2017, when we started the company, mm-hmm, we have 3 people in operations, customer service and operationals. were three people in the team.
Mm-hmm.
And we have, we manage, when we start, like 10 operations per day.
These are transactions, right?
Yes.
So starting in one currency and ending
yes,
in another
and
currency.
Yes, that's right.
Okay.
Nowadays, in one day, we can do 500, and we are three people.
So you can do 500, as in that's the upper limit, or right now you're processing 500 on average?
We are now processing 500.
Okay.
And we don't increase the people of the team. And that's the point of automate process, because you can do it faster,
mm-hmm.
and the people can be focused in another operational task
okay.
in the same department and can make some evolution in their know-how of.
I see. So you're using automated processes to grow instead of having an established team and using automated processes to downsize.
Yes, that's right.
Okay. And so in that sense, you can run a very lean team,
mm-hmm.
right? Because you have
yes.
the support of technology,
yes.
in this case, bots, as you mentioned. Is there a point where everything except for those exceptions can be fully automated? Or do you see one point in the future where the whole process will be automated or could be automated?
Not the whole process, because you... Also, if you have bots, you have to see some exceptions that they can solve it. Most of the part could be automated,
mm-hmm.
But you always need humans to look how they are doing their work.
Mm-hmm.
So probably we could continue automated, and probably we are going to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Because we need very fast operations. We want to give that to our customers, faster operation, faster financial services.
So when your customers reach out to somebody in customer service, is the first line a bot, a chatbot?
Yes, it's a chatbot.
Okay, and then they can escalate from that to a real person.
Yes, that's right.
Okay, so then... In the realm of human interaction, human elements, what is it like having a team of co-founders who have different cultural backgrounds that they're bringing to the experience? Can you talk a bit about that? And not only that, but two of you have a relationship. You're married, right?
Yes.
And the other one, of course, has a friendship with the other two.
Yes.
Can you talk a bit about those dynamics?
Yes. They have also different culture as me.
Sure.
So we're really new between us, but I think we complement each other in different scenes. For example, Mateo that came from Europe, from Spain.
He
lived different scene. He know that financial service there in Europe are grow faster than here. But for example, I knew Peru reality, Peru culture,
yeah.
How we want to be treated.
Does that mean patience?
Yeah. Also. And for example, Matias, that is from Argentina.
Yes.
He also know how is the region, and as he's very financial, he looks how Peru is between Argentina, between Chile,
mm-hmm.
between Mexico,
yeah.
How easy or difficult could be to go to each country. So I think it's very interesting how we put our background
uh-huh.
on the table every time we talk about a solution, because everyone talk about, no, but in my country, when we do that, so... Give you something more to view the solution for some problem.
I see. So in this instance, you have that diversity of experience
yes.
that you can draw from
yes.
among the team, right? So kind of Spanish style versus Peruvian style versus Argentine style.
That's
and
right.
find some balance in the middle.
Yes.
And so what does that look like when you're making an executive decision, right? Mm-hmm. Because I imagine there are times where you don't fully agree.
Yes.
And so what does that process look like as you try and find common ground and reach consensus on which direction to go?
Well, like, all of us are like, or have like a numeric career. Mm-hmm. So we are very logical. Mm-hmm. So it's perhaps it's quite easy because we are going straight to the numbers. When we have to make a decision, we go just straight to the numbers. Perhaps most of all, well, the three of us must start thinking like feeling, want to, because we are like numeric and we are.
So, so you're saying, although you start initially with what you think, what you feel, you have to back it up with data, to evidence to support your decision. So in that sense, because you are logic driven, right?
Yes.
It's very easy to convince the whole team.
Yes.
Based on the supporting
and
data.
If someone is not agree, have another support, probably that more data or something, and put on the table, and we say, okay, yes. And if you give this information to the other of two of us, I mean, as we are very, very logical, we say, oh, okay, we have another variable in the equation, so we have to look at it and make a decision with all of this. So perhaps we are not too much emotional, so are more logical. So it's just give me the data, and we are going to make a decision with the data.
Yeah, in your business, in your industry, in terms of considerations, primarily you have one of security, right, and convenience. So cost savings and time savings. How difficult or challenging is it to balance those two, right? So in the sense that you're adding value to your customer experience, but at the same time, you have to be in compliance with regulations and take the proper steps to ensure that you are providing a security-based product for your customers.
Yes. All financial services must be very secure. We are really convinced about that. That's why we have a second product that is for anti-money laundering, that we're just put in the market last month.
Last month?
Yes.
So a few days ago or the beginning of the month?
Yes, at the beginning of the month.
Yeah.
Of May, sorry. With that, I'm trying to say to you that we're very convinced and want to convince all the fintech ecosystem that not because we are fintech, we are not involved in security. And this new product called Rexty Scan try to prevent anti-money laundering, and we use for every transaction in Rexty. So many, all of our transactions look if it corresponds for someone that is in one blacklist.
And, I see.
Yes. So that's why we prevent that. How we balance convenience, security, and the commission. Fortunately, with all our technology background, we're very focused that if we can automate all we can, this low commission could be maintained in the time.
I see, okay.
So that give speed, give security, and also save time.
So the automation enables you to offer a lower commission rate.
Yes.
Because, of course, the cost is lower since there are less human hands that are touching any part of the process.
That's right. And give security also.
and give security as well, because you know every time it's processed, it's going to be the same inputs and outputs.
Yes.
There are not going to be any human errors unless it's in the code, right?
Mm-hmm. Unless it's in the code.
Really, really fascinating. And so I'm wondering if you can share publicly what is the money laundering or let's say the anti-money laundering landscape here in Peru. You know, you mentioned that this new product was released last month. What have you noticed as the impact or the results for some of your customers?
Yes. Well, first, we give this product for our clients from the RexDFX, from the underlying product, for free. So we look that they start using that. We now that we start selling that,
You're selling the product or selling the data from the product?
The product.
Okay.
It's like a software service. So we start giving some information about that. Many people, many companies specifically, are looking for that and are very interested in that.
Sure.
And really, we're like the first software as a service in Peru that is focused in preventing anti-money laundering. It's like we're just with RexDFX, we are in fintech, and with RexDScan, we are in RegTech. So now we are like two live products.
Does that mean that it opens up who your potential customers could be? Not just, of course, large financial institutions, but the public sector as well? Because I'm sure in terms of enforcement of regulations, tax codes, they would be quite interested to see, you know, what are some of the trends that are developing in the industry like that.
Yes, that's right. It's oriented for private and public.
And so does that mean that in the future, potentially, you could open up new product lines in adjacent spaces like that? So not just fintech, regtech, but in the future, some other space?
We're planning our next service just right now, and we'll be in financial services.
Okay. And do you have a timeline for when?
Yes, we're trying to put in the market at the first quarter of 2020.
First quarter of 2020. Okay.
Yes.
Interesting. So then also thinking about the future, can you talk a bit about expansion plans? I understand you're here currently only in Peru, right? I'm also sure that at some point you're going to expand beyond Peru.
Yes.
Can you share when that might be? And which country in particular, or which countries are you targeting?
We're going to be in Argentina by the end of this year. So we're planning all aterrizar, how to...
Oh, you're going to enter?
Yes, how we are going to enter there. So now we are looking for that.
And that decision to enter Argentina, is that... because one of the co-founders has connections to Argentina?
Not exactly. No. We really look all Latin America, but the condition of Argentina were perfect.
Wow. Can you elaborate? What do you mean by perfect?
Perfect is like it's very similar than Peru. For example, we both of these countries use dollars because at some time of the history, they don't believe in their own currency.
Sure.
Because they have political issues. So it's like safe money. So that's why it's easy for an Argentinian to open an USD account easily. They also pay rents in dollars. Buy cars in dollars, insurance in dollars, like here. So it's very, very similar like Peru. So it will be easy for us in this point of view to go to Argentina. In other countries, you don't have exactly the same, so you have to make some modification, and will be a little bit heavy for us at the first time. But I think, yes, it will be the first.
It sounds like, in terms of use cases, there's mm-hmm. definitely
yes.
opportunity there. What about differences in restrictions and regulations between mm-hmm. here in Peru and in Argentina?
Yes, they are different. The regulation is different. We already analyzed it. Fortunately, with lawyers, we analyzed that. The conditions still are good to enter to that country.
Okay, so although there are differences, of course.
Yes, but difference between here in Peru, you don't have some regulation, a specific regulation about how to exchange money. And in Argentina, you do, but could support how Rexty do now, the process, how Rexty use the process here. So
looking beyond Argentina, where do you foresee the next market to be?
Could be Costa Rica.
Costa Rica.
Yes, we're just analyzing. Could be Chile, but we're looking just right now. We're not. We see the map.
Yeah.
Yes, but we don't go. We don't do the task to go to as deep as in Argentina.
I see. And do you know yet how exactly you're going to enter Argentina? Is it going to be joint venture? Are you going to find partnerships on the ground there? Are you going to replicate another office?
No, we are just in that planning. Mm-hmm. We are looking different options and probably hope that in 2 months we already have the company there.
Great. And does that mean that you will be traveling more frequently to Argentina?
Probably, yes.
Just you or the whole team?
No, probably we are just one of the three. Have to go
rotate or something, yeah.
More continuously there.
Pretty exciting stuff ahead then, huh?
Yes.
What about financial partnerships here in Peru? Can you talk a bit about how you were able to communicate in the same language, the same way with some larger companies, and to convince them that you were able to add value to their existing portfolio of partnerships?
Yes, I think we have two groups, like the financial institutions that give you the opportunity to talk to, the other ones that not yet.
I see. Okay, so some are more open to
yes.
initiating the conversation,
yes.
seeing if there's a good fit, if there's alignment of services or complementary
yeah.
services, and others just, you know, they're too busy or they're too big,
yes.
or they're just not interested.
They are not interested, and they just look at you as a traditional exchange currency.
I see. So basically, they look at you as a kind of online currency,
yes.
just like any shop that you would find
that's
on the street,
right.
but online.
That's right.
Probably
that's more risky because, for example, don't use cash. Everything is digital, and
yeah.
that's a very big difference because when you use cash, it's more related with money laundering here in Peru.
Hmm.
So that's why if you don't see the business model or don't give us the opportunity to talk about it, you could make a bad decision about how the business model works.
I see. So essentially what you're saying is they're making assumptions about how
yes.
Rexty is run, but their assumptions are wrong.
Yes.
I see. Okay. So in that sense, I mean, the financial partnerships that you've established already, are they sufficient for
mm-hmm.
the level of growth that you're targeting and that you're achieving?
You mean the regulator?
No, so you have partnerships with other banks here, right?
Oh, yes.
Like Banco...
Banco Pichincha.
That's the one.
Yeah. Yes.
From Ecuador.
From Ecuador.
Yes, which is actually kind of interesting, because if you already have an existing relationship with another bank from another country, it seems like there would be some natural extension there to enter the Ecuadorian market. Mm-hmm. Of course, I'm sure you were aware of this, but then chose not to. Although I understand Ecuador also does use dollars.
Yes.
And so curious why you didn't move towards that direction and instead went to Argentina instead?
Well, specifically because Ecuador, his money is dollars and they don't have something to exchange. Mm-hmm. But for example, in other countries of the region, it's not common that a person, or especially a person, could have a dollar account. They have some restrictions.
In Ecuador?
Not in Ecuador. In Ecuador, okay. You have just dollars.
Yes, but there's a lot of cross-border commerce, especially in the north of the country,
yes.
Right? So there is this exchange between soles and dollars.
There, yes, right? Yes. But when you have a cross-border, mm-hmm. It's like a remittance.
I see. So it's okay. So then it's not, because it's not the same market.
Yeah.
It's classified differently.
Yes.
I see.
That's right.
So then, I guess then my question is, even if you have an account, maybe you don't know this. Mm-hmm. Maybe I'm asking the wrong question. But if you have an account in this Banco Pichincha, mm-hmm. in Peru,
yes.
Does that mean that there is any sort of connection if you go and you also have an account in that same bank in Ecuador? Is there that reciprocity?
No, because in each bank, mm-hmm. for example, here we have two kind of accounts, in dollars and soles. Mm-hmm. And each bank you open, you have to have, you need to have two currencies.
Okay.
Because you have to put an amount of money in each account.
I see.
Why? Not to make the cross-border. Mm. It's just that the locals support that. So it will be very difficult to, if you want to change, I have the money in Peru and send it, because it's costly.
Okay, got it. And so in that theme, I'm curious if you see an opportunity for a fintech startup to, let's say, disrupt or to optimize the remittance experience, improve mm-hmm. the remittance experience?
Yes, yes, yes. Yes, it's part of the roadmap that we're planning in RexD.
Oh, okay, so
One of the services
in RexD, you're...
In RexD,
in the future.
In the future, we have a roadmap, uh-huh. and it's priority.
Yeah.
And probably one of these services will be remittance, because it's also from exchange money from one currency to another currency.
Sure.
But you have to span first, probably, to have the support or make some contracts with other banks or institutions outside to give you the opportunity.
And as I understand, the cost to send remittances is not particularly high, right? Because you're able to use digital payments and process it digitally. The cost to receive remittances, especially the last mile, is quite high. Just like you mentioned, there's a security risk to go to a cash exchange place and exchange dollars for soles or soles for dollars.
Well, here you have two commissions. Mm. The bank that you give in the money and the bank that receive the money and send it. So now, for example, remittance in Peru, yes, they are high. For example, they could, for one transaction, you must pay like 1,800. That is huge for us. For example, is 80 is too much for a kind of.
Yeah. So what I was referring to specifically was the act of going to a cash pickup place, right? So when the remittance comes, you have to go to the physical location, traditionally, right? If you go to like a Western Union
or
Electra,
yes.
right? And so that is where the bulk of the cost is, not just financially, but time-wise, right?
Yes.
So to send, of course, like you can send from a bank account in, you know, using one of the money transfer or remittance services online, but then to actually pick it up, so from the digital space into the physical space, that's where most of the cost is. That's how what I understand. Do you agree as well?
Yes, yes.
Okay, so then in your future portfolio of products with RexD, does that mean that you're going to try and keep everything online, everything digitally?
Yes. Okay. Yes, because look at the end part that we are talking about. We already cover it when we make a currency exchange right now, because we send it to your currently account bank, so you don't have to go to any place. So if you make remittance also on the can from US here, you can do the last mile and send it.
But that's assuming that the recipient has a bank account or has access to financial products that can communicate with RexD. Remittances into Peru are about $3 billion per year. I assume a portion of that comes from the 600,000 Peruvian Americans who are in the U.S. Mm-hmm. sending money back to their family. If their family members are a bit older, they might not have a bank account, right?
Yes.
And then they might have to basically take a taxi, go to...
But you have another kind of solutions there.
That's not what you would be focusing on as RexD then?
Not now.
In the future?
Yes. We never discard any solution that impacts financial services.
Okay.
But with that, probably you can use some digital account in which you can send this. I don't know if you know about digital wallets.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like some solution that they could use, and you send it back, and they don't have exactly an account. So there are many, many solutions that you can look at.
But it also, I mean, it has to be user-friendly, or there needs to be some sort of sponsor, like somebody who's responsible for that. I'm thinking of like older family members, right? You know, like older than 70 or 80 years old.
Okay.
Right? It's, I think, challenging to adopt new technologies at that age. I mean, I hope when I'm that age, I'll be able to navigate that.
Yes. Well, first, I think as every product, we must choose our customer.
Mm.
Probably, for example, in currency exchange, we are not for everyone. Probably the people that don't want nothing, don't believe in digitalization, you need more effort to convert that.
Yeah.
So.
Would you say it is a large part of the effort that RexD makes to educate its customers? Is it based on best security practices, trying to combat money laundering, so AML?
Yes.
Or is it just like trying to educate them that there is an alternative to basically losing your money when you exchange it?
No, I think it's the second one.
Okay.
Yes, for sure. You have to educate that, and hey, this is an alternative, and it works.
Mm-hmm.
And if you show this to someone that don't used to do it, or don't used to take anything digital because don't believe, it's just like you have to show it. I think it's natural, or a friend, or someone that believes.
So in that vein, because seeing is believing, do you have a referral program or like word of mouth whereby existing customers, if they refer a friend or family member, there's an incentive?
Yes, there's an incentive for our clients and the ones they refer. Also, it's word of mouth.
Word of mouth.
Yes.
Word of mouth is a bit double-edged in the sense that, of course, it's great from a cost perspective, right? Because people love your product so much that they're telling other people. But then also what that also means is that you're not in control of your growth channel.
No.
Right, so...
Not exactly, because I think word of mouth is a result of something that you do. For example, if you make some campaign, or if you give some bonus from someone, if you start a conversation in social medias, and they start talking about you, you give them some information that they want to share with someone else. Mm-hmm. And yes, you have that control, because you need to plan this campaign. You need to plan your digital marketing.
Mm-hmm.
And all because you want more happy customers.
Yeah. I'm not sure that I would classify word of mouth and digital marketing as the same thing.
Okay,
If you have a concerted digital marketing campaign,
yes,
then you can, you know, you can track what are the conversions,
yes,
so on and so forth. So I wouldn't call that word of mouth. The way that I was thinking about word of mouth in this instance is that without external stimulus, the customer is so delighted by using your product, they feel compelled to tell somebody else who would also benefit from using that product.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Without any sort of influence
or
encouragement from Rexy.
Yes.
I wasn't clear enough. Sorry about that.
Yes. No. But it's right. I think we focus in digital marketing with their strategy.
Mm-hmm.
Specifically with word of mouth, sometimes we make something that delight someone. For example, when it's not our responsibility, but the bank crash. No, the bank has some...
You mean the back end?
The back end, yes. And,
yeah,
and the customer know it, that it's not our fault, but he feels that he can make the currency exchange. And then we work till midnight and say, hey, I work for you.
Yeah.
Don't worry. I give you some bonus. They don't expect. They don't expect.
Ah, I see.
So we are trying to delight this customer. So we have some specific situations that we need to delight it, and we know that they are not going to expect nothing about us, but we are going to do that.
No, so I think that that's great, because you're going above and beyond their expectations,
yes,
right? And so then they realize that you do care for their well-being as customers. I think there's also a bit more understanding from their end, right? Sometimes they just want someone to acknowledge that there's an issue, because they're annoyed and frustrated that they can't do what they should be able to do.
That's right.
You know, they can't yell at the bank, right? So then maybe typing angrily at a chatbot or something.
That's right. Yeah.
Now I'm thinking a bit about cryptocurrencies.
Okay.
Right? And wondering if you have had a conversation here to expand in that area, right? Because when you're converting dollars and soles, of course, you know, Bitcoin has been around for at least a decade, right? There are other cryptocurrencies as well. Has that come up as a potential segment of the financial services market to expand into? If so, you know, what decision, or if you decided, or is it on the roadmap? If not, Why not? Please. Okay.
Talking about cryptocurrencies, in the short term, it's not in our roadmap. Why? I think because it's very specific for a very specific market. And we have to, I think if we want to impact financial services in developing countries, we have to go straight to the point, to the ones that use financial services or the most that use that. And cryptocurrencies is very few people that know about that. So that's why the first. But we don't discard blockchain, that is not exactly the same. But for example,
underlying technology.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, but using blockchain, yes. For example, in a few weeks ago, three, I think, we went to a hackathon of that. That made TechStars, and we obtained, that was a hackathon of blockchain that TechStars do in Lima, and we won the prize of
congratulations.
How to in 54 hours we could develop some product using blockchain that impact financial services in Peru. So that's what we want to do, impact financial services, but massive.
Okay, so that's the general mission then. So yes. Anything that helps you achieve that, you're open to considering.
That's right.
And in this case, you know, at this point, anything with cryptocurrencies would be too niche.
Yes.
Okay. All right. So as we draw to a close, I always like to give an opportunity to the interviewee to share something that I haven't asked you about, right? So it can be something about yourself, about Rexty, Lima, Peru, Latin America, or it can be something as general as what's the best advice you've ever gotten. It's very open-ended, so this is the time for you to share anything that you would like, but that I didn't ask you.
Okay, I think that the first thing is that you always must enjoy what you do, whatever you do. I think how I work is like that. If I someday I wake up and don't like, I just quit. Because when you work in something you do, it's something naturally. And you did it for passion, just like that. I think an entrepreneur is like that. You choose to be an entrepreneur or not. So if you want to do something that really impact, just focus, do a plan, and start it.
Yeah, very simple, but very effective. And focus is key.
Yes.
At one point, you have to stop planning and start doing.
Yes.
And then, of course, it's always good to have the ability to be able to walk away from a situation and knowing when to walk away, right?
Yes.
You don't want to get caught up in the sunk cost fallacy.
Yes, yes, that's right.
Well, on that note, Claudia, thank you so much for your time and for sharing a bit about the Rexy journey thus far. Really interesting to hear how you approach the problem and, of course, your solution to it, and looking forward to seeing Rexty expand across Latin America. And perhaps I'll be able to use it the next time I come back to Peru for a visit.
Yes, will be great. Thank you very much for you.
Okay, until then, thanks and take care.
Thank you.
When it comes to fintech, there's still much untapped potential around the world, especially in Latin America. Technology clearly enables the unlocking of value for Rexty's customers, thereby giving them back their time in addition to peace of mind. Thank you for taking us behind the scenes of Rexty, Claudia. I hope you'll join me next week when we wrap up Season 1 with a special episode featuring a very intentional impact investor. Thanks for listening.